Welcome to episode 7 of East Meets West. I'm Tom Merritt.
When after 6 before 8, I'm Roger Chang.
It was so high, I had to actually go check to see what number we were on.
And thankfully, I downloaded, so the number should be up this week.
Yeah, I noticed we actually had 3. We were up from 2 to 3 on the traffic-o-meter.
No, I'm sure if I had downloaded it again, I may be able to boost that one more.
Yeah, you know what? I should subscribe to it in iPodder and iTunes. And then keep it on auto-update. And then subscribe to it on a separate version of iTunes on my desktop here in the office. Is all of this integrity? Is all of this ethical to game the system that way?
Really?
Especially when you're talking about 4 and 5.
Yeah, you know, hey, whatever. I'm sure there are a lot of ethical people who do very unethical things because, damn it needs to be done.
Name one.
Oh, well, see, unfortunately, they're all politicians, so I don't think they really qualify as ethical.
Yeah, see, name an ethical person who does that. I think you're right.
I can't think of an ethical person.
Jesus. Buddha. Oh, you want, like, modern people?
I want people who are still breathing and walking this earth.
I don't know. Stephen Hawking?
I don't know. His whole theory on black holes and wormholes, I don't.
You find unethical, or you just don't agree with it?
I don't know. I just find him very... I find him very shifty.
Sneaky shifty. How is Stephen Hawking shifty?
Dude, he has the perfect poker face. I swear to God.
That's not nice.
It's true.
What about Paul Simon? Not the musician. The former state senator of the university, or the senator of Illinois.
You know,
almost at the University of Illinois. I don't know.
So I have no idea like his background.
All right, well,
you might have to elaborate.
Jimmy Carter, ethical?
Yeah, naive.
Naive is that different from ethical though?
That's true. Well, you know what? Of late, I would say that he's the tone he's taken has been less than ethical as he's been kind of hypocritical about a couple of things in the current administration that he himself has. Is it going too low? That he himself has done.
The mic's over here. Oh. You're way over there. That's the problem.
Oh, those are the drapes.
So, yeah, because he was involved in the beginning of the Middle East policy.
Yeah.
Especially regarding the Gulf.
Regarding Iran, specifically.
Yeah.
And
Iran and therefore Iraq, because of the Iran-Iraq war.
It was actually before with the hostage taking after the mm-hmm. overthrow of the Shah.
No, but the decision to support Iraq was started during the Carter administration.
Oh no, yeah, that
yeah,
was.
That's what I was referring to.
I thought you meant the actual.
Uh-huh.
When
they started to give arms to Iraq.
They actually gave money, a lot of money, most of the weapons,
which was turned into arms.
That's true.
Because you can't hug an insurgent with nuclear arms.
It's true. Well, let's get onto something that people can actually understand.
All right. Apparently, you've been bitching.
Yeah. Someone on a forum caught me saying that my last job was both poorly managed, and I'm saying it again, and it had the bad work ethic.
Now, you were working at CNET at GameSpot, or I work at CNET, not at GameSpot, but that seems pretty harsh. To just come out, because now here's the context for people. It was This Week in Tech, Leo Laporte's podcast, commonly known as Twit, and they were introducing everyone. This is, you know, John Dvorak, columnist, and this is David Prager from Revision 3, and they said, this is Roger Chang, well, formerly of CNET, but you're not there anymore, and what's up with that? And then Prager sort of goaded you, is like, tell him what you told me in the car, and then that's when you came out with the poor management and bad work ethic.
Yeah. I don't think that's unduly harsh, actually.
Well, now, if it's true, obviously, it's not harsh. It's just true. If it's not true, it's mean and awful. But either way, if it was said about me, I wouldn't like it.
True. But see, you're fortunate in that you are either poorly managed or have a bad work ethic.
And I have to say that I don't really know a lot of the people that Roger works with, so I can't make a judgment.
Now, if people know me and know me personally, they know I don't lie about stuff like that, and I'm not prone to exaggerate unless it's comedy or I'm trying to make...
And this wasn't comedy.
No, it wasn't comedy. I was being honest.
Well, and that's a key point.
You know,
I'm sure some people would jump to your fence and say, oh, Roger is just joking.
I'm not being glib. Ah, see, I'm using a Matt Lauer term, or actually a Tom Cruise term when he was berating Matt Lauer.
Are you trying to say I know nothing about psychology?
You haven't done the research. He has. But yeah, I mean, I can quite honestly, and you've known me for a number of years. In fact, probably more years than you care to care to know anyone, that I don't regularly kind of do stuff like that in a public
forum.
No,
not in a public forum. It's pretty unusual.
So
bitch a lot, though.
I bitch a lot, but not publicly.
Generally not publicly.
You know, I'll bitch in private.
So what happened? What happened with the bitching in public?
Why I don't, or with that instance?
Yeah, what happened in that instance?
Oh, well, anyway, someone caught wind of it in my at my work, and they were steaming mad, I guess, to put
it. Well, yeah, a couple of GameSpot guys mentioned it to me, and they were all upset about it, too. Understandably.
Yes, that's true. Of course, you know, at the same token, you know, maybe they should kind of see why exactly I would say that. I mean, they've known me for a year, and they know I'm also not prone to making exaggerated claims or lying.
And you're not trying to implicate every single person who works at GameSpot.
No, the question asked me is like, so why'd you leave GameSpot and David Prager? So you tell them what you told me in the car. So I left because of poor management and bad work ethic.
You're a bad work ethic? Or a bad work ethic?
Bad work.
You didn't make that clear.
Hey, see? To each his own. Whoever picks up from what I just said and gets really offended, then get offended.
But there are good people working.
Oh, definitely. I'm not.
Okay.
No. But the reason why I left, those are the reasons. It wasn't because of a specific, oh, yeah, that guy with the, you know, long brown hair that doesn't exist. It's all short over there. Is there anyone with
the brown hair? Now what have you done?
Okay, whatever.
The guy with the long blue hair.
You want to say that. The Martian. You know, the Martian over there forced me to quit. No.
The guy from Kandor, the Bottle City.
In Superman. No, it's realistically, it's, you know, not any one person. It was just a system that I was unable to mesh with. I was incompatible.
It wasn't.
With.
Well, you're not saying it wasn't me, it's you, though. Huh? Or you are saying that, actually.
Yeah. It's,
All right. Well, that's fair enough. I mean, you think.
I'm not blaming a specific individuals or a group of individuals. However, you know, in my experience there, that is what kind of...
Here's going back to the other question. What made you actually say that? Because like you said, you don't usually air your dirty laundry out in a public forum like that. How did that happen? How did it slip out?
I'll have to admit some emotion was involved in that. I caught
Roger is not a Vulcan.
I am not a Vulcan. However, I heard
he's a man.
I've heard through the proverbial grapevine, or you know, whoever you want to talk to, that rather unpleasant and I would actually harbor to say it's very. What's the best way to say that?
Bad stuff was said about you after you left? Before you said
before,
the public
thing? Before I said, but a lot of stuff was actually behind my back. And that when I caught, I was kind of still probably seething.
School.
Yeah, I know. I was probably still seething at that point.
Dude, you know what they were talking about out of recess?
Roger sucks because he badmouthed his last job.
So there was some emotion, but then was it because of the goading? Because they were all looking at you like, why'd you leave?
Yeah.
No?
I wouldn't say it was because I would. If no one would have asked me, I would have not said anything.
You wouldn't have said anything.
But right. If someone asked me,
that's interesting. It's interesting. You're sort of acting like a politician right now.
That's true. But
I've never seen you like this.
It's interesting. But I'll say this: I've actually mentioned that more than a few times to anyone in private who's asked me why I left.
True. I have heard you say similar things before that.
Yes, not the exact words.
Mistakes were made.
Yes, and they weren't corrected. Believe me. So
All right.
Hey, if you guys want to stick me to a cross and do it, I don't care.
Hey, you're still looking for a job though.
It's true.
You're not gonna get hired there again.
You know.
Not that you want to.
That's
not quit if you wanted to work.
That's not exactly a bad thing. Roger, your career in gaming is over.
Like I was saying right before we started recording, I've seen plenty of awful people rise to the top, and I've seen plenty of really brilliant people never get a chance. So who knows what'll happen?
Yes, who knows? Indeed.
Look at my dog, for instance. Almost euthanized at one point in her life, but now she's bounced back. And I'm not saying you'll be euthanized.
Or bounce back, but
or frankly bounce back. No, that's
jeez, talk about being a politician. I'm not promising you anything. Maybe a little glimmer of hope.
No. I think all will work out in the end.
Yeah, it's just not at my last job.
Maybe Superman will have.
If Superman is a hot blonde, actually
Supergirl is.
She's a hot blonde. Yeah, I'd be totally like into it.
So I've been picking up Superman comics more lately, actually, and I noticed
how do they weigh?
In the most first of all,
they're skinny.
Not that expensive. I mean, relatively speaking, $2.50 for Adventures of Superman, relative to inflation, is not that much.
Yeah.
But man, you read them in like they're like candy. You read them in like 5 minutes.
Are they not skimpier than they used to?
Oh yeah.
Be?
Well, and I don't know. Maybe I read faster or something. But I think smaller.
I think the problem is that they've made the panels bigger.
Panels are bigger. The paper's thinner, so they feel thinner because they have that glossy paper instead of that thicker newsprint.
And I do believe they actually. I mean, oftentimes for serialization, you know, even not David Copperfield, but the guy who wrote it, Christmas Carol.
Charles Dickens.
See, you know.
I thought you were talking about magicians at first for a second.
But.
Even Charles Dickens...
You know, when you wrote Great Expectations, it was originally a serialization, which would explain why you read the book, it feels the way it does, it kind of starts and goes. And I think they often do that a lot in comics because they want people to pick up issue after issue.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, I want to follow the story, right? I'm interested in following a story, but it's like I get a little nugget of it, and it's gone. It's done so quick.
You know, for people who aren't avid comic book collectors or just... You know, comic book fans, but do want to read the stories. I often suggest that they just pick up what's called in history a trade, a trade paperback. And what they do,
I did that with Kingdom Come, actually.
That's a great example. I mean, for some people who just weren't interested or didn't seem, you know, even though the Alex Ross covers were a bit eye catching for me, didn't want to like wait each month. You can usually wait, and what they do is, if it's a series like one off series like Kingdom Come, they'll take the whole thing and put it into a book. If it's a story arc from a regular occurring series like The Adventures of Superman, mm-hmm. they'll take the story arc and they'll turn that into a book.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, you know, they'll sell it that way. It's great, you know, reading for people, you know, who don't regularly read because you get an entire story from start to finish.
But the problem is once you pick up one of the monthlies and read that, then you want to get the next one because you want to find out what happens next.
It's crack, dude.
I mean, it's total crack.
How else are they going to hook you?
It is like crack, too, because the high has gone so quick.
And you know what? I used to buy like 15, one at the high point of my binging career, I would pick up like 15 or 20 books at a time for different series and just read them, you know, all at once. But the problem is I'd start to get like the different storylines and different characters mixed together because I've been reading all, and especially because they're all, you know, occurring issues, you know, every time you pick up a new one, oh, did I get that one? Oh, wait, that was a different issue. That was for a different series. And it's kind of confusing and a bit frustrating, but, you know, for the comic geek, that truly is the, you know, that's the enjoyment. That's being able to master that, to go in and pull off what you need and what you don't.
Right.
That's true. If there are any people hiring for, like, any comic-related industries, I'm available.
God, this podcast is becoming one big resume for you.
Yes.
Because that's interesting, because I've noticed in comics what I've also noticed in baseball cards, which is they really... have learned how to push the limits of how much product they can push out there. I mean, baseball cards got ridiculous at one point. There were like 5 different manufacturers, and each manufacturer would make like 6 to 10 different sets per year,
now,
if not more in some cases.
I know this occurred during the mid-90s in comic books where there are a lot of startup comic book companies and would do like 8 different covers of really crappy series, and they never sold, but they kept pushing out their special foil covers and special bags.
Right. That was kind of based on the baseball card
Yeah, to kind of peak, you know, not people actually read comic books.
The collectors,
people want to use it as quote-unquote investments, which I tell people it's the worst way to invest your money if you don't read comic books.
No, and I think it got worse in the baseball card industry because with cards, there's not... you talk about how fast a comic goes. I mean, the content on a card is a picture and a few lines and stats on the back.
What would be the going rate for like a rookie card of MVP of a?
You're talking. I mean, for a lot of things, you're talking $15-$20, okay. Which is quite a return if you pay the nickel or whatever. But then you think of the investment it took to get that out of a pack back then, and then. You know, yeah, there are some that are in the hundreds and 500s, but those are pretty rare.
Because, you know, if they weren't, they wouldn't be 105. And that's the thing is a lot of these comic books is that
it's always a bell curve. You're not gonna be hoarding away the bell curve.
Yeah,
you know, the bell curve's at the end that most people don't have.
Exactly.
Yeah, even like Reggie Jackson from the A's in the 70s, you know, $25. It's not just because some people are like, well, yeah, the recent cards aren't as valuable because there were so many variations that there's no standard of which one should I collect.
Well, what
it's
you,
not like there's one rookie card. There's like 15.
What do you consider like the first card or the first sets of cards to kind of do where people looked at it more as kind of a monetary investment where they saw some sort of return in the 5-15 years down the road?
It seemed like 84 is sort of the bellwether for everyone jumping into the game and everyone starting to buy cards with the idea of, hey, I'm not just buying cards because I like them. I'm buying cards as an investment. Because that 1984 Topps set, which I probably have three complete versions because I just went crazy back then and bought it. It's worthless. $15, $20 for the entire set. The current year set sold retail on the shelf is like $60, roughly. You know, depending on what versions of whatever. It can be more, it can be less. But, you know, that 84 set is because everyone bought it.
Yeah.
And it's not even worth what you paid for it then.
Yeah.
And the weirdest thing about this is I have seen the Don Mattingly rookie card from that set, which is the only major rookie out of there. I have seen that card sell for more than the complete set. As it's almost like, well, I don't have to take all of the other crap. I can just get the Don Mattingly card.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, like, really, it was, you know, outside of Golden Age comics, which really the reason why they're so expensive is literally because a lot of them were recycled during the war, back during the 40s, and, you know.
Also printed on very, very degradable paper.
Yeah,
so
they,
even if
they
you
were
kept throwing, them in an attic,
they, yeah.
they could turn into dust.
Silverfish, you know, moisture. You know, a host of other things would easily degrade.
One of my favorite Golden Age heroes, Silverfish.
It's a rather disgusting name, I might add.
And his scales of justice.
And his lust for paper, or at least, you know, fibrous material.
But cards have started to recorrect themselves down. And actually, Major League Baseball has taken an iron fist in the licensing of the images now that they have negotiated an agreement to own the images for the players. As well as for the logos and the league-related stuff, they've said, you know what, we're only going to license two companies to make...
And that's Topps and Fleer?
Topps and Upper Deck, I think.
So Fleer's out of the game completely.
Is it Upper Deck that's... Now I can't remember. Well, Donruss is out. I think Fleer's out. And now I can't remember if it's Upper Deck or a different company, but Topps is still in it. And they said, we're only going to license a couple, and they have to release their sets in the same year as the season. And there's some other restrictions that I don't know. I was talking to the guy at Amazing Adventures here in San Francisco. He was explaining it to me. But basically they said, because what the Topps company was doing, is they were releasing the first half of the 2006 season, let's talk about 2005. They released the first half of the 2005 season in November of 2004. Immediately after the season ended.
Very odd.
So half the players are in the wrong uniforms, managers are on the wrong teams, because, you know, stuff starts happening.
Yeah.
December, winter meetings, all free agents, all that stuff starts happening, so weird. But the Major League Baseball said, no, you're not going to do that anymore.
Interesting.
Cuts down on the number of sets. And
now have the cost per pack gone up, or are they about the same? Relative with inflation.
Well, I don't know. The new sets haven't come out yet. I expect them to be the same, but I don't really know. I bet somebody out there knows.
Yeah, I mean, like, the cost of comics have just gone up steadily due to... I'm not sure about what the circulation is, but the actual circulation of comics has actually dropped.
Mm-hmm.
As most, the majority of the readers for comic books are my age.
Yeah.
Like, middle 20s, early 30s.
No, I noticed that.
A lot of kids these days are either reading manga or they're reading, you know, other stuff or finding it on the web. And so you're catering to a smaller audience, but they still try to get you with, like, hey, there's two variant covers. You know, you can, and there's always a limited edition, which really, really irritates me, that you can only get at events like Wizard World. Of course, you know, those who are comic fans know that Wizard is kind of the de facto, you know, monthly magazine of comics.
Right.
So they have their own little convention. Of course, they also have special releases, be they toys, issues, or lithographs, or, you know, not any number of things, because they're sold in such small quantities, but so highly valued, it's highly sought after. There's a huge, like, cottage industry where people say, you know, they sell WizardCon 2004, you know, in Chicago, you know, limited, blah, 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 you know, He-Man, you know, with alternate sword or whatever. And they make, like, a killing off that stuff.
And the funniest thing is, a lot of people are like, wow, but I guess it's a good investment if you... It's not.
No.
Collecting these things, comic books, baseball cards, a lot of this stuff is never a good investment. I mean, yeah, the values can go up on the stuff you buy if you're smart, but it doesn't go up that much. You'd be much better off just putting money in bonds.
Exactly, or, you know, a CD. The key with comic books and any hobby is that if you're thinking about selling down the line, you got to realize that there's only a limited number of people willing to pay that price. It's just like buying a used car. People are always going to haggle you down.
Yeah.
People aren't going to go, I'll give you $500 for it. I mean, unless it's a super valued, you know, it's done out in an auction house where it's, you know, like there's only three in the entire planet.
Well, and see, that's the thing, right? Is there has to be a limited amount available, and usually the only way for there to be a limited amount available is for it to have become collectible later.
Yes,
but
after people have
already gotten rid of most of them, even if it's a limited edition, and especially if it's a limited edition, every single person who buys that limited edition is going to keep it in pristine shape. There's not going to be a scarcity, even though it's limited.
Yeah, like it's so funny you mention that, because when I was a kid, I bought the first revamp of Ghost Rider for Marvel Comics. I got the first issue, I had the stupid little platinum. Was in cover at the time when it came out, like 2 years later, it was priced around like $80 or something. They're not $80, it was like $50 or so. And then I looked at it recently, and it's now like down to $8. It's like, because people don't care.
Yeah, well, that's another thing, is they don't, unless they're a Mickey Mantle rookie card, they don't hold their value.
Yeah, it has to hold some inherent value. And normally, this will be
historicity.
Historicity. I'll have
Philip K. Dick says.
The person who buys it has to have some attachment, either because it, you know, it's a childhood kind of relationship, or, oh, that reminds me of my childhood, or it has some sort of special connection. Outside of that, and it's like, yeah, look, buddy, I'm not going to pay you $50 for, like, you know, 8 sheets of colored paper. But the same story I can buy in the store in a collected works edition.
Yeah, right.
You know,
or even, in some cases, download online for absolutely free.
Yeah, and you know what? Even Golden Age comics, there's a couple of companies out there. What they do is they do either from microfiche, or they actually scan the pages directly,
uh-huh.
which you can get a lot of these Golden Age issues out on CD-ROM. And
oh, yeah,
sell,
that's great.
And they'll sell it for, like, you know, $30-$35, and you get, like, you know, 100 issues.
Not the best viewing experience, but it's economical.
It's economical, but you know what? If you get a good flat panel, not CRTs, good flat panel. You know, it's not so bad. You can read it and you can enjoy the story. Doesn't have the same, you know, tactile feel. Doesn't have the same kind of feeling. I still enjoy reading, you know, through a book. Unless it's like a short article or kind of an op-ed piece. Now, I'm not going to read War and Peace, you know, on a computer screen.
I did read F. Scott Fitzgerald's The Beautiful and the Damned on a PDA.
Wow.
I'm
amazed you're not wearing glasses.
Well, maybe that's the only reason I could make it through is I don't wear glasses, but... Not a huge novel, obviously. It's not War and Peace, but not one of his skinny things.
Was,
you know,
between
200 and 300 pages, somewhere in there. And you know what? I actually found it after a while enjoyable. PDA screen's not that bad on the eyes. At least I had a color tungsten E. So, you know, it's decent. I would read it in small bits. That was the other key. Yeah. I didn't ever have a long stretch of I'm going to spend the afternoon reading like I would with a regular book. It was always on the bus, you know, riding to work in the morning, riding back.
Do you ever find sometimes that you're trying to remember what happened before because it's so... Like, I did that on a couple of times, and I was trying to remember. It's like, okay, what happened?
I read paper books. Yeah. I read regular books on the bus all the time. So I kind of built up the talent for catching up. And I could do keyword searches.
Oh, nice.
So if I'm like, wait, is that the same guy? I just put in Michael and look for him.
Like, one thing that I saw really, really impressed me at CES... was the Sony ebook reader.
Uh-huh.
Originally what I thought, it's just another Rocket book, right? Then I realized it uses digital paper for the display, which means that the display is persistent. It's non-volatile. Even there, it only uses battery power or, energy every time you flip.
Well, those electronic paper is like an electrophoresic thing where there's little balls that are white on one side, black on the other, is usually the way they do it for the non-color displays. And they just sit there and they're... You know, electricity can flip them between white and black.
Yep.
And if there's no electricity, they just stay there.
Yep.
So you're not talking about any light emitting.
You're not talking about
any electricity humming through, no refresh rates, nothing.
In many ways, you can kind of think of it as like those old iron filing, like an
etch-a-sketch
style. And it's great because, you know what? Those things are very, very easy on the eyes. I mean, I wear glasses.
Easy on the eyes.
Easy on the eyes. Hey, listen. When you're wearing prescriptions like mine... It's he was joking at me last week because I had the text in a browser really large. It's like, Roger, why are they so big? It's like one word per screen.
It was pretty big. It's pretty huge.
Yeah.
Well, it was on a new computer or new hard drive that I had installed. So I thought something had gone wrong, honestly. Like, why is the text so big? He's like, what? What's the problem? Oh, you did that. Okay, I'm sorry.
And the reason I do that is not because I need it to. I do it because as I read longer,
it makes total sense.
If anyone has ever seen me use a computer, they know I use a mouse with either my left or my right, depending on which one's the least, tired.
Sorry, the dog's interrupting us.
Yes.
I think the dog's telling us we're almost out of time.
Are we?
we're pretty well summing up. So
you're
talking about your bad eyesight. Go ahead.
Bad eyesight. So the ebook reader was great, and if they can make it color, so you could get nice photo illustrations.
They do have a way to do color. I've seen several different implementations of it. It's not perfect
but for say you're doing, like if you're reading a book on either physics or perhaps, some sort of art history book, you can look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be pretty cool because, that is a great way. I wouldn't mind having one of those around if I was going to read on a flight or if I was going to read.
Well, the other thing about reading it on the PDA was I liked that I could just press a button to scroll. Yeah. You have to hold the book open, or you have to have one of those little plastic things to keep it open.
What's great?
It was better on my wrists.
One-handed operation.
Worse on my eyes, better on my wrists, and one-handed operation.
That's one thing I enjoyed about using.
Where are you going with that?
Well, when I used to travel.
What kind of books are you reading?
When I travel a lot, like I'm standing in line at the airport, one hand's always on my bags, and it's kind of nice to be able to read something. And not have to put stuff down and pick it up again. Put stuff out.
I was not flipping pages. I was not squeezing. I was not breaking the spine.
If they can shoot that stuff straight in the back of my retina, and so like I walk around and there's just text hovering over everything I see.
My eighth grade math teacher, Leighton Petticord, told us. And believe me, he had plenty of jokes made about his name. Leighton Petticord said that by the time we were grown up, whenever that was, that they would have ports in the back of your head that they would just stick a wire in, and you would learn by doing that.
His point was always,
we're not there yet, so open your books. But
yeah.
He really believed that. And I wonder if he still
probably
thinks it's
not
common. Around.
I don't know, maybe. Maybe he tried himself and found it quite unsuccessful.
And ended up an eighth grade math teacher.
All right.
All right, well, thanks, folks, for joining us for episode 7. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Roger Shank. Don't blame me.
That was Django back there.